July 19th, 2011, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. loving, imagine that it was all hideous but true. The wild things we do, it could be nothing if mine, just someone that I knew. Gone are all the faces that are linked to the dark. You could be right about, you could be right about.
For Pedro Show, it's Tuesday, and kind of sweaty, huh, Brother Matt?
Yeah, but cooler here than everywhere else, yeah. It looks like.
Yeah, not too
We're
sweaty.
Lucky.
On a relative tip.
Yeah.
But if you were Italian on Black Hill, or anywhere north of Pedro, right?
Bacon.
It'd be a sweaty thing. It's supposed to turn, though, huh, to get cooler?
Yeah.
We start off the show with The Invisible by John Coltrane, and then we heard Pleasant Experience by El May. And Brother Matt, we got some guests.
Yes, welcome everyone.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. Wards, is this your first time at Pedro?
It's my first time in the actual place.
Of
San
Pedro. Cal native, but first time in Pedro. Yeah. Awesome. Welcome.
Yeah, we're talking about where he's from, is from OC, which isn't too far.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Not too far, probably closer than Hollywood is for us.
Pedro, you don't pass through. You gotta actually want to go there.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. No, I know all the cities off of the 5, because that's how you get from Orange County to Hollywood.
Yeah, he was an inland guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people in Pedro, when they think, because if you look out the window here, and you see the harbor, well, the rest of SoCal bends around, and that's the part of OCBC is
Huntington,
Newport. So that's, what I think, somewhat Pedro people think, unless somebody's talking Disneyland.
And the farthest, like, punk rock people went was to Zed Records. Then you went back home. Mm. You didn't come down here. There was no reason to come down here.
Yeah,
but everybody knew that that's where the Minutemen were from.
Oh.
And everyone knew that Black Flag was from some other place, from Mosa, and the Red Cross, but you never went to those places.
I think they were Hawthorne.
Oh, Hawthorne, okay.
It's like Beach Boys, close to the beach, but not on the beach. But Zed is where I went.
Yeah.
So that was mutual then. It was hard for us to play down there. We tried as much as we could.
Orange County was almost impossible.
It was always changing. In the old days, there was some place called Ichabod's.
Yeah.
And there was a skating thing called Galaxy.
Yep.
And then there was stuff on the beach next to the Golden Bear, Safari Sam's. Mm. Sam had that place for a little while. And then things would spring up in strip malls and be gone. But we always tried to play there as much as we could. There's something on PCH near Sunset Beach called the Twilight Zone. It's a strip mall kind of thing.
And there was a guy named Jerry Roach that had a couple of clubs.
Well, yeah, of course, the Cuckoo's Nest.
And there was another place, too, I think called Radio City, that was
Radio City,
in a strip mall. And they had, no romance or cachet, just, no atmosphere. But it was some place, too. I mean, all of Orange County, in general, has no romance or atmosphere. It has no history other than orange groves and illegal people working to right. make money and to stay alive. It's a brand new place. It was the fastest growing place in the United States when I moved, my family moved here. I think it was 100,000 people, and it grew to a million in just like 5 years.
Wow.
Just like aerospace and all this yeah. other whatever. And also the smallest population of black people. So it's totally homogenized right-wing jagoffs.
Oh,
and I can
sorry.
Say that. Yeah, because I can say I live there.
People doing the yards ended up living there. It's different now. Yeah. Santa Ana, yeah. that area, they have a lady councilwoman, which, mm-hmm. what was his name? Dornan?
Yeah.
And Dornan used to run that place.
I mean, that guy was just to the left of Hitler. He had a
and there was another cat, too, a Cali one called named Schmidt. Or
yeah. I mean, these guys had propositions.
Who slept with the son.
Yeah.
That weird karma thing.
But those guys, like, had legislation in the House that was like, we want to pass this law that says we can take illegal aliens and drive them to Costa Mesa. Like, from our district, that's where the line is. We'll just take them in a van and then put them there. And this is for real. I'm not making
yeah,
that stuff up.
Yeah, I believe
up.
It. That's where the Cougars is. Because
that was the constituency. So,
yeah.
to like, punk rock to come out of that is like, very peculiar.
Well, you know, a farmer would tell you, if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. You know?
Yeah. There you go.
Bring it on those. I remember that Schmidt guy had a whole secret family.
Yeah.
He had,
right.
A lot of that stuff is smoke and mirrors, but things kind of changed, kind of calmed. It was weird. It grew so fast, maybe not so much towns. Maybe Orange was more of a town. I know Santa Ana yeah. really has an old downtown.
Yeah, that's where I think the 5 used to be yeah. Anaheim Boulevard, and it ran through downtown Anaheim and downtown Santa Ana. Those were actual, you know, what you
right,
call
Anaheim
it.
Was a town, too.
Yeah, yeah. Real towns, but the rest of those places.
Strip mall
invented,
with
yeah.
track home. Kind of inclusion.
Nothing. I mean, I remember as a kid growing yeah. up there, when you saw something made before the 50s,
yeah.
like in downtown Orange, we had this thing, the Orange Circle. You just go down there and go, wow, this is like a museum. Because everything else was drywall
yeah,
and
stucco yeah.
and just, I had no flavor. I remember watching movies as a kid, like, where's that? Because that's, I don't see any of that. That's not in our world. Everything is absolutely brand new. And a lot of vandalism.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
people weren't from there. I mean, that's the whole thing. I don't want to get in the history of the United States, but we're not from here either.
That's
but
right.
we're really new there. So there's no sense of, like, history or ancestral homeland or any of that. It's
right.
just, like, brand new, plastic, gross, not homogenized.
Bouncy castle.
Yeah. There you go. It's lots of, like, postmodern, like, miniature golf, and that was our reality, just to break out of that.
I remember me and Dee Boone driving through there, and we wondered what people have to do with young people, is just hang out in malls.
Yeah.
I know people did that at Delamo and stuff, and it's like, whoa. But at Pedro, we didn't really have that. But in fact, I grew up next to a dairy. I came here when I was 10.
Hmm.
From Virginia, and there was a dairy. I grew up smelling cow shit.
Yeah.
Just like, but they put up the, not so much track homes, but condos came here in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And these little narrow streets.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So
we suffered from some of that, too. But not to make everybody totally down, because it is California, still. Not a part of Southern California. But I'm really interested in your musical journey. When did you first get into music? When did you hear stuff? You were a boy, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I actually lived in Manhattan Beach for a couple of years, then Canoga Park, and then we moved to Orange County when I was 5. But my first memories are like seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I know this is like what Gene Simmons and regular rock people say, but I was 5 years old in 1964,
yeah.
and that I just went, that's what I want to do.
Right.
That's when AM radio would play like the Seeds, Frank Sinatra, Burt Bacharach, soul, you know, kind of semi-hard R&B. You got everything in one
pop.
Yeah,
I remember.
And to me,
KSJ,
I mean, that's
was the big stage.
Absolutely. That's when, like, you know, black music finally penetrated into white, whatever, you know, consciousness and avant-garde. Like, Bob Dylan is the first mainstream avant-garde artist I can think of, unless you think of something before that. And that's the stuff that I heard when I was 6, 7, 8 years old.
Oh.
And I'm 50, be 52 in a couple of months. I still listen to that stuff. It's what, like, you know, is in my blood. I'm so lucky I grew up during that period of time.
Yeah.
That stuff. And just,
so you're hearing the radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to get records, or you want to start actually started making.
Oh, well, I was buying 45s at Sears, you know, go down there, you get five for a dollar, I think it was. My brother and I, he's like, oh, have you heard this group? And he'd always turn me on to the worst shit, like, you know, who's that band that did the Unicorn? I don't know. It's just he'd always put, you know, turn me the wrong way. But you know, I loved, you know, Creedence and Sly Stone, and bought all those records when they came out, and wasn't really thinking about ever playing. You know, I was like, I was a an athlete. I was fast, so I was good at sports. But you know, as you get into the sports world, I don't know. I don't mean to generalize, but something like 99.9% of the people that play sports are assholes. And so I don't want to hang out with you guys. You know, does anybody like, you know, like Ronnie Spector? Like, who's he? You know. And then just like was a weirdo. I have a high IQ, and was like, don't hang out with normal people. And pretty soon, you know, I'm like, this is awful. You know, I love music. I love art. I love creative stuff, of reading, thinking about stuff. When will this not be a liability? When will this, you know, work out in my favor? And like about end of high school, I start hearing about this thing, punk rock. I worked
up
at this
point. You have not played.
Never played. But
that's like Joe Biden. That's
at
so
the same time, about 17 years old, this guy, he had this Beatles songbook, and I go, can I borrow that for the weekend? And that weekend, I learned how to play G, C, and D. You know,
some chords on the guitar.
Some chords on the guitar, and then somebody else said, you know, this is, you know, that's 1, 4, and 5, and, you know, that's every song. And then I could just figure everything out from
and
there.
And then the punk thing, you started going to gigs?
Yeah, no, my brother had seen, like, the Runaways and the Flaming Groovies and said they were terrible. And I hated my brother, so I'm going to like that stuff. And then, you know, all those bands like the Ramones, the Damned, Sex Pistols, they all did an oldie, and that's where I come from. You know, I come from, like, songwriting, and I wasn't weird. I didn't listen to progressive rock. I hated the 70s, other than, like, the Raspberries and Badfinger, stuff like was totally pop and AM. I'm like, when was that going to come back? Well, probably never. And then punk rock was the closest thing, because all those bands did
songs.
Yeah, an oldie, and they were 2 minutes long. Yeah. And then, like, that's also where the hip intelligentsia was. And I could just sort of feel it. And the first time I went up to Hollywood, to the Other Mask, I saw these people. I'm like, this is
Santa Monica Boulevard.
Yeah, I'm like, you guys can't possibly have day gigs. This is way before you see punk rockers at the mall.
Yeah, you see
one punk rocker a month. And cars would crash. You'd just go, what's that guy doing? Because people had flares. You're the same age I am. You know what this is like. It's just, you know, in Orange County, you get pulled over for being punk rock.
And
just
people shout, fuck you, Devo.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you listen to B-52's, fag? Like, a class was just going to go do that. And then,
did you see Arena Rock? Did your brother take you to that shit in the 70s?
No, I think the closest thing, I saw Queen, because they opened for Mott the Hoople.
I saw that gig.
Yeah, so.
Where was that? At the Civic?
I can't even remember. Maybe it was at the Forum or the Sports
Arena.
Long
Beach Arena?
I thought it was the Santa Monica Civic, maybe.
I think I saw the Faces.
I remember that. They were opening up, and it was not the Fandango. It was more Keep Yourself Alive. They were more rock and roll.
It was like a Killer Queen.
Right.
Opening for Mott the Hoople.
But it wasn't the opera. What was it called?
Yeah, it wasn't the
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, it wasn't that.
So it was kind of rock and guitar, I thought. Mott the Hoople was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite groups, the Pontiac Clothes.
Oh, you like them?
Oh, yeah.
I like Mott the Hoople. So you saw them, but you didn't go to a lot because I had never been to a club to punk. So all I knew was Arena Rock.
Yeah.
But I liked that AM radio thing, too, where it was everything mixed up.
Right.
And the songs were short.
Yeah.
And FM radio, I remember when it came, you know, you could hear the sunflower seeds in the deck. Versus, like, these very hippie. Then it got controlled. Brother Matt did some work for them later on. Yeah, he's got a big history in radio.
Wow.
And he's probably in the decline as a pure... Mm.
Yeah, it just took a lot of the fun out of it as it evolved. Didn't get that eclecticness.
Yeah.
It's like market research.
Yeah.
Everything's like that, you know. It gets co-opted by people who want to get in on something. And it's just like punk rock, you know. We'll get to that part in the story where wow, punk rock is so cool. And like 2 or 3 years later, it had been co-opted by all the Orange County people. We're like, you can go somewhere and fight? Yeah, here's this black pill. Snort that, and then everybody with long hair punch in the face.
Yeah.
And everyone with a mustache punch twice. And that's exactly when I went, time's up.
Yeah.
You were the exact people I was trying to get away from.
Yeah, and you know, a couple summers ago at Warped Tour, I played this stage, the Hot Topic stage, you know?
The Hot Topic.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, the Hot Topic, we're going to debate some stuff. And they said, no, this is a store at the malls where they sell punk clothes.
Yeah, the store in the malls, Hot Topic.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I don't hang out much with malls. But anyway, we're jumping ahead of ourselves.
So yeah, I saw these bands. Yeah, I saw these bands.
Saw these bands. So
I'm like, I can. I'm as good as those guys. Yeah. You know, and there's no leads. I'm like, that's good.
Yeah.
And songs I can follow along. And the bands I saw, I don't remember one name of any of them. They were all nobodies. It wasn't even like F Word or Fear, who I must have seen 20 times. And then I saw, you know, like better bands like X. And they had way more in common with where I was coming from, which, you know, I hate to admit, I hate saying the word rockabilly, or I like rockabilly, because people think of the Stray Cats or this sort of...
Yeah, Billy played before Roy Campy,
right? Yeah, I think he played in Gene Vincent's band, but like the Burnett Trio, I mean, there's nothing more punk rock than the Burnett Trio, and real guitar players, guys that, you know, just can really work the instrument. I loved them.
I know people got pissed at him for smiling.
Yeah.
They didn't like the way he smiled and did that shit. And I thought it was kind of cool. Like, fuck you, I'm going to look like
this. And they were really a tight band. What's his name? DJ Bonebreak was just such a great drummer.
Yeah, he's wild. I first saw him in a band called...
The Eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one never gets smarter. Yeah. The Eyes, and Charlotte was on the bass.
Right.
I got to do a gig with him a couple years ago, improv, with a violin player named Chris Murphy, up in Sierra Madre. No songs, just get up there
and go for it.
He's got that big band kind of trip. Yeah. He does mean marimbas, too.
Yeah.
He's got a band where, don't be good with the notes, you know. Okay, so you're seeing these guys, and you're starting to hanker more for, like,
right. Yeah, like, I don't want to be in Sha-na-na. It's really weird, too, because at the exact same time, I don't know if you remember this, like there was Madame Wong's and the whatever, the other place across the street.
Hong Kong Cafe.
Hong Kong Cafe. And you couldn't go to both of them. You had to pick a side. And even though I probably had more in common with the people who liked Dwight Twilley than the people that were going to see the Screamers.
Dwight Twilley open for the Jam.
I'm like, I can't hang out with you people. You're lame. You're wearing really ugly clothes, and you look like you're from... last decade.
The new wave.
And these people are more on my wavelength, so I just sort of went with that crowd.
Yeah.
But my group of people, the bands I went to go see were like the Blasters, because they were doing a more authentic version of, you know, they weren't Sha-na-na, they weren't the Stray Cats, they were authentic. They were doing all this music that I loved. Starting to meet people are like, look, you have 7 records, I have 7,000. Come over to my house and I'll play you all this weird, cool stuff.
Wow.
And then, through that...
That community.
I wanted to join the Cramps, the guitar player in that band.
That cat, that singer, Lux, big knowledge of...
Yeah, yeah, but they really...
This guy was deep.
Yeah. And Brian Gregory had quit or was kicked out, and they picked this guy, Brian Tristan, from a band called Gun Club, and renamed him Kid Congo.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. And I saw the Cramps at the Whiskey, and I'm like, oh, pick me. And they said, oh, you know, send us your phone, your picture and whatever. And they didn't pick me. I took my 2-week vacation there and just sat by the phone like, nope, that's not them.
But up to this point, you ain't been in a band.
No.
See, the ball's out.
Yeah.
Huh?
And sure. that didn't happen. I was really, you know, deflated and... whatever. And I went to see Billy Zoom do his rockabilly show, just Billy Zoom, DJ Bonebreak, and 2 of his rockabilly pals.
Yeah.
And I remember I was at the show, and I was sitting in this room at this bowling alley in Culver City. It's this huge affair. And I was in a room with Jeffrey Lee Pierce, who I didn't know at that point, Chuck Dukowski, and somebody else. And Jeffrey was just undressing Dukowski, whatever his name is, Chuck, about music. Because Chuck was trying to talk to him about soul music, and he was like, oh, yeah, the Supremes. He's like, that's not soul music. And just Jeffrey knew like 1,000 times more than this other guy, but The one guy was famous, and the other guy was just some.
Did you know Slash Magazine? Because he used to write.
Yeah.
Ranking Jeffrey. Yeah. And so he showed off what he knew.
So I knew that guy, and I'd seen Gun Club.
Well, he's buddies with Kid Congo.
Yeah, and I'd seen Gun Club. And I'm like, that wasn't bad. I was surprised that little guy could do anything. And then I just said, hey, do you still need a guitar player in your band? I didn't say, I want to join your band. I just said, do you need a guitar player? You still need one? He said, yeah, I got my number. I was in the band the next day, and we were playing like a month later. I just, all of a sudden, now I'm in this thing.
You know, the first thing I heard, I remember they played a Fleetwood.
Mm-hmm.
Were you at that Fleetwood?
No.
Yeah, that was the other cat.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Cary Grant?
His name. No, he was a... Ritter was on the bass, and Terry was the drumming.
Uh-huh.
They had another guitar.
Kid Congo. Yeah, Kid.
No, before Kid.
I don't know.
They didn't have a guy before him?
I don't think so. I think it was Jeffrey and Kid's
band. Okay, then maybe it was Kid then.
Might have been
I seen him a lot with Kid, but I just remember this early gig at the Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Playing in front of hardcore dudes. Yeah.
Well, so my first few shows we played with the Adolescents, and those people were like, if you don't get off the stage right now, you're going to be dead. I mean, and Jeffrey would just egg him on, because he was just like, I don't care about punk rock. I'm so far past this.
You don't remember playing the Fleetwood?
I never played the Fleetwood. I went to the Fleetwood a few times and just watched people fight and then left.
The Fleet Dump, that's what we call it.
It just looked like it was always on fire. There was always a fire, and somebody just being, their face being smashed in.
Actually, for us, it was kind of cool, because it was closer to
Yeah.
I used to think about OC guys having to go to Hollywood. That was a hell of a ride. But, okay, the first thing I heard recorded, John Jones, the Urinal bass man, had a label called Happy Squid. And there's a thing on there called Devil in the Woods.
Yeah. It's called Keats Rides a Harley. It's a compilation that guy Vitas, whatever his last name is, just showed up to rehearsal and put up some microphones and put it on a 4-track. It said, go, do another one. Okay, that's it.
Is that your first recording?
Yeah. But, I mean, it was less informal than this.
I'm going to play it right now.
Okay.
What you deserve. with me, but if you got to go.
Pedro Show. You just heard live at the Love Grotto here on the Pleasure Point. Mr. Ward the Dotson with Be Merry.
Very cool.
Which is a tune he used to sing with Pontiac Brothers, which we heard before that, doing Big Black River. And we started with Devil in the Woods Gun Club, which we have been enlightened to the fact it was your first recording, and it was just Vita setting up some mics at the prac pad.
Yeah, it was just like, this guy's going to come in and put some microphones up. I mean, at that point, Gun Club, the first Gun Club album is, I mean, I don't like the Gun Club, so I can talk about it freely, saying it's good or bad, because I don't give two fucks. but it, now it's like, you know, like, that's the White Stripes' favorite band, and all these people come up to me, Bono, or, well, he doesn't come up to me, but I met him once, and he just wanted to talk to me about that shit for an hour.
A lot of people like Gun Club.
Everybody loves the Gun Club, and to me, I'm like, really, what was your job in 1981? That's about as important as it was to me. But to a lot of people, it was a big deal, and I just think back, I'm like, how could it be a big deal? I was involved in it, you know.
Because maybe you were so close.
Yeah. And it was kind of an unpleasant experience. Like, you were in a band, Mike, with your best pal.
Yeah.
And you were going through this great journey together.
Yeah.
And I was in a band with my least best pal, a guy who I, you know, thought about hitting with a golf club over
the
thing.
We did fight, so.
Yeah.
We used to pull over on the freeway and, like, roll around for a while, get back in when we got tired. One time we had army clothes and we were fighting in, It happened to be called Hollywood. It's in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Park.
And it was from a bank, so the bank people called the pigs, and they came there. And you know, and I had a beard and army clothes. Hey, you know, where's Che? You know, D-Boone comes out of his health food store with the spirulina. Hey, I found it! And he goes to me, where are you from, Hollywood? And I didn't realize it. That's something you would say here, you know.
Yeah.
In Hollywood, Florida. So, yeah, so I think those other cats, their Gun Club experience is listeners, and you were a doer.
Yeah.
And sometimes the doing is like way away from listening.
You didn't have to go through your hell.
Yeah, so, but you know what? That stuff stands up. I was listening, Matt, Matt and Coco and...
Sai.
We have other guests. Yeah. Very rude of me. But he told me you were coming aboard, so I went and listened to it again, and that stuff is not just of 81. It holds up.
Well,
your guitar playing is really happening.
Well, as much as I hated Jeff Pierce, he's a great songwriter. He has no, like, innate musical ability. He just, through guile and will, was a musician. I mean, he had no rhythm.
Yeah.
He sang in the key of whatever, Jeff.
Yeah,
it's just like... Any note. That's it. That's the one I'm going for. I remember being in the studio with Chris Stein, who was, you know, in Blondie, and with new music. He's like, Jeff, you got to get up to that note. Like, just pushing him, like, it doesn't work. He just is his own entity.
Yeah.
But he was a great lyricist. He was well-read. He was a weirdo in his own trip. And those people are sometimes socially retarded. You can't hang out with them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
They'll just eat food off of your plate or say what's on their mind, even though it's the rudest, most untoward thing you could think of to say. He just would blurt stuff out like, I haven't been in a fight since I was 4, but I'm about to punch you in the throat, dude.
So Torn must have been real fun.
He was a very smart guy, and he wrote great lyrics that were way, way past the bullshit that was happening in Orange County and L.A. at the time. And that's just, you know, from a guy who hated him.
Well, Watt, Dirk told me that Jeffrey Lee dissed you one time.
Oh,
like
everyone.
I don't recall the story exactly, but
he was nice to me in person.
Yeah.
But he said one time he just laid into him, like our friend who owns a guitar shop down here. Mm-hmm. And then, we could talk to Dirk about it later.
Personally, he was talking to me back?
No, like Jeffrey just laid into you at a show or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because
Dirk said he remembers that story.
Yeah, maybe I was too. But I remember talking to him a bunch, especially later when he was not in good health.
Yeah.
He was still nice, but he was tripping out. He was rapping Japanese.
We all have our moments, right?
Yeah, this was in his way to death.
Yeah.
It was a bad time.
He declined.
But he was very nice to me. But maybe he did go off on me at a thing. Most of the people at the gigs were pretty kind, though.
But you mentioned something earlier, like about community.
Yeah.
And it really was this like closed off thing. You were either in it or you were out. There was, like, and we're only accepting a few new members every month. It wasn't. It was, and then it grew super fast at one point. But
yeah.
There was a while there. That's why I really loved it, and why I ultimately hated this scene was, you could go see a band like the Minutemen playing with Wall of Voodoo, and then a hardcore band, or yeah. the Go-Go's, or whatever. We'd all be on the same bill. And I'm not exaggerating that. It was truly a four-band bill where you'd get, you know, this disparate musical taste. And even though one of those things might not be my... I mean, I've must have seen the Minutemen 10 times, and I don't never bought your guys' record, and you come from a different place than I do, but I always loved watching your band. You know, or stuff like Beefheart or shit that doesn't ever come across in my music. I love that stuff because it was weird, and you guys coming from some other place, I love that. As soon as it got homogenized and you have to wear this handkerchief around your engineer boot and do this, I'm like, oh, this is the antithesis of what I was, you know, looking for. But
when you guys would work out the songs in Gun Club, you're writing your first music?
I had some ideas that are on those records that came from me, yeah. You know, they came from my influences and what I could do on the guitar, which was pretty rudimentary and caveman. Like, I started playing guitar when I was 17 or 18, and I was in that band at 20. So
sure,
how much...
Right,
how I'm just banging, able to bang stuff out. But yeah, definitely, you know, my imprint is on that, along with Terry and Rob. It wasn't just Jeffrey. He had a crack band.
Yeah.
I was just talking with my middle-class buddies, and they were, you know, Mike Atta was saying, telling somebody who was sitting in and listening to the conversation, said, oh, you didn't see Gun Club. Jeffrey had a crack band. You know, it's just like X. Those, you know, once you get a really solid rhythm section, almost everything sounds good.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, you guys went in and did an album after this stuff with Vetus. You did like a real album.
And at this time, we're still getting booed.
It's called Shot of.
We're getting booed off the stage pretty much everywhere. We don't fit in with hardcore. Even X's crowd is like, I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
And then we made a demo, and Jeffrey had connections with Slash magazine,
right.
And which was also Slash Records now. And he went in there and played the tape, and they're like, well, who's this? This is Gun Club. Well, you should sign this band. You need to, you know. So he put, Bob Biggs said, I'll give you a little bit more money. You can finish this, and we'll put it out on Ruby. And it came out and just got 5-star reviews.
Yeah,
it was reviewed in New York Times, mm-hmm. in places that, you know, punk rock never got reviewed.
Right.
And we just went from fourth band on the bill to a headliner, just like that, you know. And pretty weird. And we're big in Europe, and all people in other bands
you
loved it.
You see, you start to tour.
Yeah, and then we got in a van and started playing all over the place.
Right.
And got our first taste of that. It was pretty wild. And we saw Jeffrey's head grow, like in the Grinch, you know, when his heart grows from this big. We saw his head just go whoosh, and then he was just untenable. I mean, he was not the most pleasant guy to be around up to that point, but once he got famous, it was just like, forget it. And he wanted to be a drug addict. I've never met anybody who, like, romance being a drug addict so bad. That is so easily arranged for anyone. If listeners need to get my phone number, you know, I'll explain to you exactly how you can become a drug addict or an alcoholic. It's very easily arranged.
Yeah, and it's really conducive to working relationships with members.
And we already had a guy in the band who was doing that on his own free time, and he didn't make it either, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then after like a couple of albums and a bunch of shows and going to Europe, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. It's just, you know, I wanted to do my own thing, and it was really Jeff's band, so we just parted ways in about 82, I think. And then I had hepatitis B. I was really sick, and I had been ripped off by him. You know, I'm like, wow, what a terrible... I should have gotten into boxing or anything. I mean, any other, you know...
Racket.
would have been better than this pile of horse crap, so... I sort of took a year off, and then...
But playing in a band like that, your first band,
yeah.
and using your guitar, there was some development, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Even these hell things, but there was...
Yeah, I mean, hanging out with Jeff, like, he was the guy that had 7,000 albums and 45s, and he had 78s. He's like, listen to this weirdo thing that nobody else has. Can you play like that? this is like new influences, like slide stuff. And of course, I'm just an Orange County guy. I'm 2021, like caveman style guitar.
Yeah, so the but, slide thing yeah, so just I, came on from listening to records.
Yeah, huh? I mean, to me, slide guitar was like, you know, Pete Ham and Badfinger, not Blind Lemon, whoever. Yeah. But he was playing this stuff all the time, and I'm like, well, this is my job. I'll just do it. I developed an appreciation for it. But at the time,
it was just, from here, huh?
Yeah.
From listening.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have some dude showing.
No.
Okay.
I had Jeffrey showing me, who's a terrible musician, who, you know, just couldn't do this stuff. I'm like, no, I can do it. You know, I'm just, you know, he'd make me tapes.
Yeah.
He had this Walkman that had a microphone on it, and he would just put that in front of the speaker, play like 45 seconds of something. I still have these tapes. They're awesome. Okay, here's another one. You know, now go home and listen to all this stuff and then come back and put that into this one song. So
wow.
That stuff was really great. You know, I got to go like from kindergarten rock fan to like graduate. Because he was buddies with Fast Freddy and all these other dudes that had thousands of records, who would trade in all of their power pop records and buy Duke Ellington records. Because that's what they were all into that month. So, you know, that part of it was great. He turned me on to all these songwriters and knew who wrote every song. I mean, this wasn't just some guy with a leather jacket and dyed blonde hair. This guy really knew his shit, top to bottom. And I'm, you know, that part of being in Glen Club, I'm really happy for. That's the good Jeffrey. I remember, like, you know, lying in bed, you know, sharing a hotel room and just talking till like 4 a.m. about songwriters and guitar players and stuff. And he wasn't such an asshole. Because he couldn't be. We were just like trying to go to sleep. Oh, yeah, have you ever heard this record? Oh, you should, Ward, you got to get this country record by so-and-so. And all that stuff was really great. So, but, yeah, the personalities just didn't work out, and I wanted to do my own thing. And so I left that in, like, 83, I think. And it took, like, a year off.
I saw him with Duckworth.
Yeah, Jim Duckworth was a great dude and a great guitar player. Uh-huh.
But he didn't last long.
Yeah,
either.
No, they all.
Because I saw a kid again. And
yeah.
Kid did a bunch of records with him.
Uh-huh.
Maybe because they went back far away. But.
Yeah, kid said had the special, you know, sensibility to deal with him, whereas no one else. I mean, it must have been 20 people in and out of that band in about a 10-year span.
Here's a little thing about Kid. Scotty got sick with the Stooges, so we had to get this guy named Larry Mullins, a guy from Knoxville.
Right.
He lives in Berlin now, and he's working with Kid. At this moment.
Wow.
And Kid's got his Pink Monkey Birds, but, you know, Larry's got things where, somebody comes in, they want to make a record, so they brought Kid in to do the music, stuff like this. Larry's a drummer, man. I did a show with him 2 weeks ago, and his story music strip, he put his drum set in the back of station wagon, followed Iggy around.
Hmm.
Yeah, to the gigs.
Wow.
Till the roadie guy said, you come and get him on a kitty. It ended up in the band.
Wow.
Playing for him for 9 years.
Wow, that's
incredible.
Awesome.
Incredible journey. But he's working with the Kid right now, this moment. So, yeah, so you hung that up, and did it leave a bad taste about music, or did you know it was just
the business? Just the business and the personalities. And
so
the
you
drugs.
Wanted to get back in with
playing. I just want to play. Yeah. I just want to have fun. And also at that point, I'd like had some success and could look at it. And you know, listeners out who have never taken drugs or acid, you should do that because it will, you know, especially acid, it just made me look at pop music and the whole rock star thing as, wow, what a stupid job this is. And I stopped, like, dressing punk rock. I started dressing like just a normal guy. And I noticed other bands. I started liking other bands that dressed normal, that didn't rock star it up. And that's what I kind of wanted to do. I just wanted to go back to me roots, you know. I just wanted to be a normal guy again.
Yeah.
I'd been through punk rock. I had some success. I just saw how ridiculous it was and how people kissed your ass 1 second and then didn't even talk to you the next second because you weren't cool anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just, you know, I went to, you know, I'd spent a lot of time taking drugs with this guy, Matt Simon, who was in middle class, and I lived with him. And we were listening to the Stones a lot. Like, these Stones records are kind of forgotten, like Aftermath and 12 by 5.
Oh, yeah.
Between the Buttons, and we just got really into all the album tracks, not the hits, but stuff I was not totally saturated on. I said, let's form this fake band called the Gallstones, and we'll be a Stones cover band, but we'll just, it's kind of a piss take, we'll just be making fun of them. And so we did this one time, and everyone said, God, that was hilarious, and you guys, that's a good band. And then we did it again, and then I saw the Replacements play. A girl I was dating at the time said, Replacements are my favorite band. I'm like, that's a terrible name for a band. I heard their record. I worked at a record store, and they had this record called Hootenanny. And the first song is called Hootenanny, and they all switch instruments. And it just sounds like some trash cans being pushed down the street with a guy going, Hootenanny! And I'm like, wow, this is like worse than the Shags. But not funny. It's just awful. I took it off. I'm like, that band's horrible. So I went to go see them, and it was like Mott the Hoople. It was fucking ripped my head off. I'm like, this band is popular? And it was jam-packed. I look around, there's John Doe, there's Bob Forrest, a bunch of other people in up-and-coming bands. I'm like, really? This can be popular? And I was totally inspired by that one show, seeing them. I'm like, I'm going to do this. Told the Gallstones, I go, let's change our name. I've got a few songs. Let's be a band. And we got our first three or four shows opening for the Replacements in San Francisco and down here through me being in Gun Club. I just, you know, pulled every string.
The Replacements, yes. That's
as band. They were exploding. Okay. Like, as they were going from a nothing band to everybody's favorite band. This is 84, I think.
Oh, yeah. We played a gig with them then.
Yeah.
It was on Halloween at Cal Arts. And
was there some nakedness? Oh, you wore outfits.
It's Halloween. Always is my favorite holiday.
Yeah.
It's the only time all year we pretend, well, we don't pretend we're wearing costumes. So I was a clown. And D. Boone was an artist. D. Boone had all these layers of green on it. Because what am I? No. Look, as I looked at him, well, artichoke! Because he had all these layers of green. So I guess it was kind of like an artichoke. Georgie had like a white sack, plastic sack on. And that singer guy got really pissed at us.
Paul Westerberg.
Yeah, he was like, you know, I don't know, like we were sissies or something. That was funny.
Didn't you? The drummer guy was cool. You be the fifth Matt? Once?
Oh, well, I obviously was never in the Replacements, so that didn't work out. But yeah, we were associated. Yeah. There's, you know, again, like, those listeners out there, they're thinking about taking drugs. Cocaine, now that's a bad drug. Acid, marijuana, I mean, for a little bit of time so you, like, expand your mind, but don't do too much, kids. And then cocaine is just an absolute, utter waste of money. I did a lot of experimenting to try and find the, you know, the one, whatever, loophole. And that's that. It did a lot of cocaine with that band, the Replacements. I can't remember any of the stories because they're the whole time in the Pontiac Brothers almost is completely blotted out.
Oh yeah, how did you get the name?
Somebody had a poster that said "Free the Pontiac Brothers," and it was this black militant group that were from like
Pontiac,
Compton,
Michigan.
I think they were from Compton, and they got jailed in Pontiac or something like that. It was something to do with that. I'm like, that's kind of a cool name. We had all these other names, like Yoko Ono and...
Pontiacs
were some other?
Elvin Jones is from.
Oh, really?
The Coltrane's drummer, yeah. It's like a town outside.
Yeah, it's out of Detroit, right. Yeah, and it kind of had a Detroit... I mean, everyone loves the Stooges and the Detroit Wheels and all the other great music from there. So, yeah. Like, yeah, okay, this sort of sounds good. And, got to make a record. We made a demo, and this some French label said, we'll, Gun Club was huge in France. They're like, you know, anything a Gun Club guy does, we'll put out. And then Frontier Records, who was switching from punk rock to, like, other new stuff, like the 3 O'Clock was on that label, the Long Riders, not my favorite bands or anything, but
Thin White Rope.
She said, I'll put your records out. And, God bless Lisa Fancher, because she let us get to make records, and I get to make records with my best pals. You know, we weren't the best band in the world, but those were my first songs, and, you know, that's why I'm doing this show. I'm fond of these guys. They're my brothers. I have a family, but I'm not close to any of them. I became close with like Matt Simon and these other guys, Mike Atta and Kurt and Dave in the Pontiac Brothers, and we toured and cracked jokes and tried to write songs and did our best. You know, the Del Fuego's liked us and the Replacements liked us, whoever, some other people liked us, but we just never had the hit, and we weren't punk rock, so. You know, like if you were punk rock, you can now play. The Adolescents are out there playing in front of, you know, 1,700 people in Argentina right now, because they were punk rock. We weren't, so we don't have any cachet in that regard. So, but we got to make these records, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
We're at the end of the first hour.
Okay.
July 19, 2011, Rock Theater Show. Hold tight for hour two. July 19th, 2011, the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. I was up this morning. Blues walking like a man. I was up this morning. Blues walking like a man. Every seven-month child told me all upside down. Every seven-month child told me all upside down. Trailed up old Jeffrey Lee, can't she turn him around? So peace be. Lord, I shake the chill.
Bart from Pedro Show started off the second hour with some Devin Hoff. Devin Hoff was righteous to play at the Dosa record release party last week here in Pedro, making Hell Ride from Chicago. He's a Southern California guy now. He wants to do something with me called the Emma Goldman Bust Out Brigade. So he whooped it up. He played stand-up. He did Arco, like he said.
Cool.
And he did Pizzicato.
Yeah, he's awesome. Things.
Yeah, he is. And he's a beautiful spirit. And Kay did good. She brought both her dogs. People are very kind to us. And Dosi Dos is out. I gave you one,
right? Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Then we played, another stand-up beat. This guy, God, I got to meet this cat somehow, but his name's Bertram Turetsky. He lives, I think, Ocean Beach or something down by San Diego. This thing they call, it's a stand-up bass too, but extended technique where you play on the other side of the bridge and shit. Because composers have made pieces just for him. And he played Lou Harrison. And I don't know, I just thought of him. He's a virtuoso, avant-garde kind of stand-up dude. And maybe Devin Hoff kind of that way. I don't know, I was just thinking. Then we heard something from Boris, Les Paul Custom 86. And then Preaching Blues by Gun Club. Is this at that same practice?
No. This is probably with Tito LaRiva from the Plugs.
Is that right? Yeah.
They were going to sign the Gun Club to Fatima Records, which I think put out The Brat. They just put out, it was actually kind of a cool, novel idea. One side of an LP would have music and the other side would be blank. It's like EP. Instead of selling it in that ridiculous 10-inch format that no one bought. Because it didn't go with the rest of your records. You had to have a special pile for those things. So, you know, I don't want to buy this because it doesn't fit. So he came up with that idea. And in the middle of that being made, that's when Slash said, no, we'll take them. We'll take Gun Club.
Okay. Because Preaching Blues, I think it sounds to me like a Robert Johnson.
Yeah, it's Robert Johnson.
It is a cover.
But it's very different than Robert Johnson's version.
But yeah, I don't know why I was thinking of it.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the words?
Well, yeah, it's definitely a Robert Johnson song all the way. But if you listen to Robert Johnson, you can't play drums to Robert Johnson. That's what's so beautiful about Robert Johnson. It's so weird and like arrhythmic.
Really trippy.
Yeah.
Same Lead Belly too.
Yeah.
I mean, these are blues players, but they had their own idea of the blues.
Drop notes and drop beats and song come back in whenever and stop whenever.
Because when Animals did House of the Rising Sun, they did it so much different.
Totally different. Yeah.
Yeah, his is like, he's almost laughing when he's singing it.
Well, I think the Animals version,
you know, it's nothing like the slow.
I think the Animals version is the version that Dylan did. They were imitating Dylan. And Don't Look Back, you can see, what's his name, the keyboard player.
Al Cooper.
No, shit. He's
he has keyboard, a lot of stories about
keyboard,
Dylan.
But he's the keyboard player in the Animals.
Chandler.
He's actually credited with the arrangement of the Animals version of House of the Rising Sun. He's with Dylan the whole time because he loves Bob Dylan.
He's got the glasses on.
Well, he breaks off that.
He throws the beer out the
well,
window.
Well, he's in some of those scenes, yeah.
Dylan gets really pissed at him.
What is that guy's name? Yeah, I can't think of his name. Alan something.
Al Cooper's on the later ones.
Yeah, he's on the electric stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
Highway
61.
But yeah, I know that guy was a huge Dylan fan. That's where they got their version. I don't think it's the Lead Belly version.
Lead Belly, he played like a 12-string, and it's his bouncy ass. Yeah. You know, Goodnight Irene, that...
Right.
Yeah.
But that version is totally different than the Weavers version.
Oh, yeah. But it's blues.
Yeah.
See, I think what happened was blues got homogenized like anything else, like the punk scene. Or
That's just something I learned from Jeffrey, who's like, you know... To me, I think of the blues. Like, you know, that's great, a great riff, but after 45 seconds, can we go to another chord, please? And he's like, well, listen to this other stuff. It's pre-electric blues. It's country blues.
Yeah.
Like country music? No, it's just called country blues. Yeah. And these guys, you know, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Skip James, Buckle James. White, Robert Johnson, Tommy Johnson. And I'm like, God, this stuff is so, it's just foreign because it doesn't have a beat.
Yeah.
It's its own weirdo thing.
It's one-man bands.
Yeah.
Yeah, each different section had their own thing. Like, Levy Camp Workers had their style, Tobacco Road, Cotton Picker style.
And then when they moved to different parts, too.
Yeah, then they kind of intermingled.
The classic that that's when he got to Chicago. That's way at the end of the line.
Right. Absolutely.
Brother Matt had a blues show on Kix, so you call it Blues Shift. So he's he got to go to Willie Dixon's house.
Wow.
Yeah, a bunch of those old guys.
Willie Dixon, the bass player, you know, in a band. I think it changed when they started making ensembles.
Yeah.
But that old stuff, it's really, it's trippy.
It's weird. I just discovered watching a baseball game. There's a commercial for Porsche that's got a dude from, East Memphis. I can't think of the guy's name off the top of my head. But it's that same one chord, just kind of singing in your own thing, and it's just beautiful. It's way more cool, and like that guy, what's his name, Robert, a writer who went down there and lived. It's the same name as that guy that did, you know, Addicted to Love. What's that guy's name? Robert Palmer, his writer, went down there and hung out and discovered all these guys. I'll remember his name as soon as I leave here, but I much prefer that. Yeah, before it gets to Chicago, like the B.B. King, Muddy Waters, that stuff's okay, too. I just heard it to death. It's like Las Vegas blues. The other stuff is so much more authentic, and it's really the sound of the expression of somebody's soul. You don't even have to listen to the meaning of the lyric. You just hear a guy singing. Like my girlfriend, Sai, just moved here from the Philippines, and I'm tutorialing her on all these different genres of music. We were listening to a bunch of black stuff, and she said, you know, why do the blacks sing better? And this is from totally innocent ears hearing this stuff. I'm like, yeah, exactly. Like that's what me and all the other white dudes were trying to do. We heard this and like, you guys don't know what you're doing. It's just coming out naturally, and we're trying to process it a different way and also do that thing because that's
you might
the shit.
You know, there's a book that Nick Tosh has wrote called "The Twisted Roots of Country Music." Mm.
Oh, yeah?
There's minstrel shit in it.
Yeah.
You know, where they would dress up and act like...
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the roots. It wasn't just guys on horses and big hats. No, and there's some tangled up things. But, of course, you know, when the market force is involved, they always want kind of images that are simple and not too deep.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that pollutes a lot of...
We're working. You bring that's a really interesting point. You're working in this medium where the market forces, and I always forget that part until it gets sour. I'm like, oh shit, that's right. Other people are listening and watching to this. It's not just me in my living room with my buddies. Other people are going to get involved in this and change it, and it's going to get moved around and homogenized, co-opted, etc.
Right through the sausage grinder. Pontiac Brothers back.
Yeah.
So you did some records.
Mm-hmm.
Five or six of them,
yeah.
And you toured around and stuff?
Yeah, we did like four tours of the States, went up to San Francisco a bunch of times, opened for all the bands of that day, of the late 80s.
Yeah.
Trying to think of, you know, of course, the Replacements. Who else did we play with? God, it was the Flaming Lips we must have played with three or four times. And they were always on the bottom of the... I'm like, these guys, why don't they just quit? And you're never going to make it. Who'd have thunk, you know? I don't think we ever played.
Bands.
Yeah, I don't think
they never moved.
Yeah.
Shows to go, you. They're bitching. But obviously the dynamic was different. These are your buddies.
This
wasn't a band that was outside that you...
We were almost purposefully not punk rock because we'd all done that and we'd seen how gross and idiotic it had become. Like, let's just do... We did, like, Boston covers occasionally just to piss people off. What's the most offensive thing we can do at this show? Let's learn, like, a Bachman-Turner Overdrive song and a Bay City Rollers cover. Just to shove it in their face. We did a great...
That's kind of punk.
Yeah, it was punk. We did a medley of that song Walk Like a Man by Grand Funk and the Four Seasons a version of back to back.
Just to
totally piss people off. And you hear this, play a song you know. Which was also the spirit of the Replacements, you know.
They did those covers.
We got compared to them. It's like the Pontiac Brothers are the Replacements.
Did you guys play drum, Phil? They played drum.
I can't really remember. There's so much alcohol imbibed in that band. I mean, every rehearsal was like a 12-pack or a case of beer. And every show was, you know, just until... There were shows that just stopped because it was just too drunk. Like, you guys should stop playing. This is too awful. It's gone way past being charming and funny. In fact, we had some, like, big moments as far as, like, career moments, not musical moments, but, you know, always trying to figure out a way to not have a job. Like, we played in Athens, Georgia, and we see this guy. He's got all these records under his arm. During the day, we're there super early because Atlanta is only an hour away. So we have to check out at noon. We're in Athens walking around. And this guy's like, hey, you guys are the Pontiac Brothers. My name's Peter. I'll be at the show tonight. And if you want to get some pizza, blah, blah, blah. He's just talking like he's just done three lines. We're like, okay. I'm like, God, who is that guy? Then we're at the show, and he's there. And these people are going, Peter, can I have your autograph? I'm like, are you famous or something? He's like, I'm the guitar player in R.E.M.
Oh.
Peter Buck. And the singer decides that that's the night he's going to just break the record for the drunkest human being ever. And, like, you know, we have to carry him. Carry him. Well, no, I didn't even know. I think he just, like, broke the top of the bottle he was drinking, and I better just drink all of this. And, like, people were pulling his pants off on stage. And then, like, the
40-watt?
Yeah, the 40-watt and the bass player, Mike Mills from R.E.M. R.E.M.'s not my favorite band or anything, but this would be a nice thing to happen to us. Maybe they'll like us and we'll get to tour with them, or they'll say something good about us. And it was just the shittiest, drunkenest, god-awful thing ever. And, of course, every time I run into them, they remind me of that show, how, like, God, you guys, like, really didn't care. Like, no, it just was, you know... bad decisions, and the list is goes on like that, you know, of missed opportunities in that band, just, you know, from drinking too much. But whatever, I mean,
so
that's the way it goes.
The band ceased to exist after a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's just after 4 or 5 years of that, like, not really getting anywhere. Like, we're seeing the Replacements go up, and selling 200,000 or 300,000 a record, and we're just like at the, you know, the same level, press up $5,000 and sell those to the, you know, to this guy and the rest of, you know, his brethren, whatever, and not really making it, and just making like $500 a show, and like, you know, let's just call it a day. And I went and did other stuff, but remained friends with everybody. And I moved to New York, lived there for a while, had another band called the Liquor Giants. Really got serious about, like, songwriting and whatever. And then, you know...
Was it the same kind of band?
No, it was a lot of drinking and drugs, but it was with a new group of people. And okay. But it was mostly, like, my solo thing. And that was, like, way more like Alex Chilton, mm-hmm. Replacement still, The Move. Like, more power pop and songwriting. I just always wanted to do that. Like, Roy Wood, yeah. You know, just like, you know, with bridges and, you know, augmented chords. And it's like I was growing musically. This sounds so lame talking about this stuff. But I wanted to do that stuff. And I just was, I'd outgrown.
Oh, you've never been there.
Yeah, outgrown 1-2 Fuck You punk rock stuff or the Pontiac Brothers stuff, which was like 4 and 5 chord, major chords. Nothing ever weird or complicated. And yeah, I did that for another, you know, 4 or 5 albums. And then at about age 40, I went, that's enough. I've written enough songs. I've done everything I wanted to do. I'm not famous. I bought a house through a publishing deal, so I did okay. But, yeah. So that took 10 years off, and Frontier Records called me last year and said, you guys want to play at this 30-year reunion with, you know, T.S.O. Eliot and the Adolescents and who are the other bands? You got that thing?
Did the Middle Class?
Yeah, Middle Class played some bands that she reissued that really weren't on Frontier, but
yeah, Flyboys,
the Flyboys,
Rick Agnew solo,
yeah. I think were they Choir Invisible that night? Or, remember when they changed to Choir Invisible?
Yeah, they recorded up at Radio Tokyo.
Yeah. So we did that, and that was kind of fun and funny. And I'm like, okay.
Turtles did that too. They changed their name to 100 Flowers.
100 Flowers,
change the name.
Right.
They went back.
Yeah.
They called the Turtles.
Yeah.
100 Flowers didn't.
Or remember the Alley Cats changed their name to Zarkons. Good move, guys.
Randy lives in Pedro.
Was he from down here? That's what
no,
I thought.
They were Lomita.
They were Lomita. Right, there
but
you
he
go.
He lives here now. He was at the gig Saturday.
He's still around? What
oh,
about
yeah,
Diana Chai?
He's got a little fanzine with recipes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think originally he was from the L.
What about his wife, Diana Chai?
Diana
Chai?
Some trippy thing with the management. And also managed Rat. It's racket stuff. Soiled and squalid.
Right.
Crap, you know. So, Zarkons are no more.
Yeah.
Well, we do, Dose does one of their songs, Angel's Face is the Devil's Daughter.
And Jeffrey Lee Pierce was in love with Diana Chai.
Or great bass player.
Yeah, she was. And sang and played bass. That's not easy.
Oh, she was something else. That was a good band. Thumb Pig.
Yeah.
Tom
that's Watson. Right.
You ever get into that?
I can't do it. It's too hard. No, I saw that band 20 times. They must have opened for X. Like,
yeah, right.
I saw X religiously, so I must have seen them. Everyone would leave for them. Me and my friend would watch. Like, why doesn't anyone like these guys? And then X would come. Everyone would come back in and watch them. So
Randy sang like Popeye.
Yeah.
He didn't have a trippy voice. He had like Popeye.
Back when you could do that. And then punk rock just kind of like, no, you have to, it has to be in this box, and if it's not, you're going to get punched in the face, literally.
Yeah. So, and what's funny is that some of those cats, that supposedly the slogan was anarchy, which means open, right?
Yeah.
Open this one way.
Well, this is like one of those exact moments where I'm like, the door is shut for me as far as open-mindedness about punk rock. Alice Bagg told me this story. She ran into the drummer from the Adolescents, and he had a swastika on his arm. And she said, why are you wearing that? And he goes, what? I'm not a communist or anything. Like, you don't get it, pal. Like, yeah. And that's where I'm from.
Was that Casey, the DI guy?
Yeah. So,
okay.
and all those guys, like that second generation, all those people, they were like into heavy metal. They were into like UFO. And I kind of like that stuff now because there's no pressure on me to hate it or like it. So I listen to it with open ears. But at the time, I'm like, no, you can't be into that. Those are the people that wear flares and have mustaches. No, you can't like that. And that's where the Adolescents were totally coming from. They're just like, you know, I got to know those guys after the Adolescents broke up, and you know, they're like, yeah, we didn't have the Sex Pistols record until like 1979 or something. We didn't even know what punk rock was until somebody, Rick probably was the first guy that turned them on. Same with the middle class. It's funny listening to them. Like the one guy that, you know, Mike Patton told me, like he told people that The Damned was his favorite band before he'd ever even heard them. Because he just heard there was a band called The Damned. Like, what's your favorite band? The Damned. That is just awesome. That is just so Orange County being 17 and trying to impress people. I love it.
I never heard them.
Yeah.
We're going to come up. We're up to the point of the show where Brother Matt's going to do this inside.
Cool.
thrill potion, something real groovy.
Which Dr. Hoffman was processing in a variety of ways to see if he could find something to tone up the nervous system. One of the formulas he compounded was designated as number 25. It was not until 5 years later that Dr. Hoffman discovered that his formula 25 was a psychedelic drug. While working with it, he accidentally inhaled some of the fumes. Within a short time, he began to hallucinate. He wrote that for 2 hours, he had fantastic visions of extraordinary vividness, accompanied by a kaleidoscopic display of intense pain.
Personality seems to wither away.
acid ecstasy. A normal dose of LSD is so potent and microscopically small that it is easily concealed. Because it is colorless as well as tasteless and odorless, it is extremely difficult to detect, especially in a liquid solution. In a single ounce, there are approximately 280,000 doses. This means at the going rate of $5 per dose, an ounce of LSD-25 would be worth approximately $1,400,000. In liquid form, LSD has appeared in small ampules, right on up to large bottles labeled mouthwash. Sometimes it may be found in crystalline form and packaged in capsules, or it may come as moist powder and in the form of tablets. The latter are usually dissolved in a sweet liquid, or in water, and ingested. Or the liquid may be soaked into a cube of sugar, an animal cracker, or a candy wafer. It has even been found in chewing gum and the gum flaps of envelopes. A common cigarette can conceal $50,000 worth of LSD, or 10,000 doses.
Thumbprint from the heart of the nation. Thumbprint. Thumbprint from the heart of the nation. Thumbprint. Thumbprint from the heart of the nation.
Break away from the mic. consciousness of previous years of our existence. Shed light where the darkness is. Align yourself with honest men. Hush, not so talkative, or we won't hear within the distance. Ancestors honor them, ancient ones and sarcophaguses. Philosophers, mathematicians died with these last wishes. To the next generation, carry on our reputation. In mind is that there are things to waste. Your time is waste when it's blue. I see my own kind of blue. Ever since the blues, gray skies got the blue. Sometimes my day has got some red, sunny reds, clear views. Sometimes I just can't be in my head. Most times I hate what's on the news. Serve this country. Defend the free speech. Got an opinion.
Now he's wrong. Now he's wrong.
No, you heard him say it, yo.
No, you heard
him say it. Go to the same church.
So now you wrong.
So now you wrong. You heard one on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
July 19th, 2011. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Sugar, I'm too long to relax. not flipped by the jury, but the old guy didn't flip by me. I didn't make that distinction. I apologize. But, you know, I think you got still a good band last night. You know, I sat up there and listened, me and my wife, but after the other gig, sat up there and listened, you know, and they did good, man. It wasn't a sorry band. It was a good band. And, anyway, I just apologize that I didn't call back the second day. And if I can make amends with, you know, I wouldn't want to lose the gig, and I wouldn't want to do you wrong, and I definitely wouldn't want to do your daddy wrong. So anything I can do to make it better, I will come and play a free gig. I'll do whatever you want me to do, man, to make it better. And I will try not to be so damn confusing on how we talk about what it is. I mean, maybe I need to write it down. You need to write it down. I need to send it to you. Send it to me. We can go, okay, it's this person, that person, and the names, and it's this time, and it's this amount of money. You know, yay or nay.
This is the last one. This is a massive thank you to all of you lot that turned up. Big thanks to Phil behind the screen. Oh yeah, there's a photo afterwards and you're all on the back cover of the album, you beautiful people. Thanks for coming down.
I'd like to take this opportunity to plug my special brew, the On Sale with Billy. All right. Yes!
Hey!
All right, see you later.
Well, enough said. That's enough for now. Let's keep on trying. All my brains are gonna pull me down. Well, enough said. That's enough for now. Let's keep on trying. All my brains are gonna pull me down. In fact, I'm just that I'm lazy. I've just been born in your bed. In fact, I'm just that I'm crazy.
Special brewing.
Thank you. We ain't got no more. That's it. That's the album.
Next album. Next
album. Coming to the next album. Then.
Yeah, we're just the warm ups.
Live from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with something live from Gun Club. I Hear Your Heart Singing. Word. It's not the clearest recollection.
I don't remember that song.
Okay. And then Wallpaper Skin, Agent Ribbons. God, where are they from?
Austin.
Is that what, they live there now, but I don't think they're from there. I think they're from Sacramento.
Yeah.
And Looking for a Sign by the Ultimate Baby Jay.
Yeah.
Who's San Pedro. Baby Jess, right? And then... oh, yeah, this band gave me their record. When You Walk by We Have a Meth Lab. Oh, yeah. I love this band name. Probably get real easy going over borders. And then Jerry Loses the Gig by Doug Walters. And Oh Well by the Super Fast Girly Show. And, yeah, so... God, that was kind of a down thing. You've said all you had to do with music. Mm-hmm. But you're here with your guitar.
Yeah.
Can you play us another song?
I'll play another song. I mean, I this is what I do at home. I'm very fortunate. I got a publishing deal from Matador when I was in the Liquor Giants. It was like $3,700 was the first payout. And I took that with my savings, and I bought a house in Silver Lake for $115,000. That house is worth $1 million now because of the ridiculous nice. Real estate thing. I did a lot of work, and I built a third unit, and I'm just a landlord now, and I don't work. I play baseball. I travel. I read.
You
play.
Must keep your property up.
Yeah. I prune the trees. And
well, there's some work.
I got into architecture. I mean, I'm interested in other things, but I play guitar every day. I sing songs every day.
Oh, so you ain't giving up on music.
No, I love music.
You're talking about the racket part.
The racket and the writing of the song. The writing of the song is very difficult. I mean, I could write you some songs right now, but they would suck.
Oh, that's why you're talking about John Fogerty.
It's
that big, he had it in him. He was working up to that.
Yeah, he was thinking about it all the time. I'm not thinking about it anymore.
That's what you meant by being in shape.
Yeah, by being in songwriting shape. You know, somebody who's not in songwriting shape, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear what the guy who is really, like, has worked his way up. He's made two or three records, and now he's ready to just bust out this. It's all coming together. That's the guy I want to hear. And maybe the records just before that, you know.
What about gig part? Performance.
Performance. That's fun. Yeah, I'd do
that.
That's
what you're going to do on the 29th.
Man, I'll play with
Blue Cafe in Long Beach.
That's right.
You're going to get...
We'll be jumping up and down.
When was your last jump up and down?
It was in November with
that's right.
With the Frontier thing. And that was really awesome because...
And before then?
Probably Gun Club about 3 or 4 years before that. We did a reunion thing
with
Kid and Terry. And then a group of different singers of local up-and-coming bands. That was kind of cool. We've done that before with, you know, John Doe and Dave Alvin and Bob Forrest and, you know, other, you know, local yokels. But, other than that, I'm pretty much just a living room strum guitar.
So you don't like performance so much?
I do, but, you know, it's just like lifting an amplifier and getting in a station wagon and then waiting around after sound check.
Yeah.
And then someone going, here's $70. Really? I'm not famous or super popular, so there's no... You know, huge payoff financially, and it's also kind of nerve wracking. You know, it's just to get in front of people and go, here I am.
Well, oh, I know.
So even though I've played 1,000 gigs,
it's
you know, everyone's watching me right now. So
we're gonna watch you right now.
All right. Well, why don't I play a song? It's not really into this guy. His name is Graham Parsons.
Oh yeah.
But he was in this band before he was in the Byrds. Which was before he was in the Burrito Brothers, called the International Submarine Band. And it was way more original country, and I love country, and this is just, I dig this song. I think it's in G.
Sometimes I get upset when people treat me bad. I don't have time to think. Busy, clock to keep my time. Three
Thank you. Thank you.
we heard something from the Liquor Giants, and it's Raining Butterflies. And this is towards the period where you want to invest in songwriting time. And, yeah, tell us about this, because it's New York City's involved.
Yeah, well, I moved there for 4 years with one girl and then moved back. But New York was a great experience. I met people that had more records, more books, seen more movies, were smarter, etc. And so,
Cali.
Yes, believe it or not, no one knows about this about New York. It's the mecca of intelligentsia for the Western world.
Well, it's trippy because a lot of the cats aren't from there; they're from somewhere
they're
else.
All from
so
other
it's
places.
It's a magnet that brings.
Yeah, the people that are actually from New York are just the same people that are from anywhere else.
Yeah.
But the people that come there to study and then stay there and have a degree from Columbia but are tending bar, whatever. I those are the people I met, and I learned what a major seventh chord was, and just got more into songwriting there. And I didn't have a lot of friends because I wasn't from there. I'm not really a sociable person, but anyway, I moved back from there with a different girl, and then we broke up, and I made the self-titled Liquor Giants record, which is just a breakup album. And then the next album, I didn't want to do that. So I just was forcing happy songs. And I kind of rewrote God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. I just sort of inverted the chords. And there were all these butterflies flying out of my, in my backyard. And I go, that's like the cheeriest, poppiest, most saccharine-y thing I can think of. And I just sort of wrote, I was going for like just that ultimate like 1971, raspberries, or what's that song? People say she's crazy. Love Grows.
Love Grows.
Like those kinds of just like the end of AM radio. I just wanted to capture that feeling. Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. Yeah. And I was really into that guy that wrote that song, who also wrote a ton of other stuff from that period. And so, I just did that like as like therapy. I don't know if it's how you came up with music, but for me, what an awesome outlet, getting to hang out with your friends and put your life on tape, and write songs. However cornball that may sound, that's really, I was never thinking about being famous or making money. I just wanted to do this thing. It's, it was totally inside of me. I woke up every morning thinking about where do you go from the four chord in the middle of the chorus there. That's how my brain was working. So, yeah, I think that's the best Liquor Giant song is that Raining Butterflies song.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the peak of my...
Now we got to play.
Canon, yeah.
And then we heard Bullet Jammin' by Joaquin A., which is a bullet, Shinkansen, a bullet train. Mm. They got them fast trains. And then we heard Bottom of a Pool by Fifth Story Tenants. Matt, you're going to have to tell us about that because it's your band.
Well, that was in like 1999, our first record, and Ward actually assisted on that album, so that's how I got to know him personally. And assisting meant sitting on the couch and playing guitar.
Oh, he's on that song?
No, he helped assist the whole album, just a he didn't produce the record, but
he wasn't recorded.
He was there for a day, helping
out.
Wasn't
his guitar being recorded, I mean?
I don't believe so.
I was just... Do it again. I was that guy.
Yes.
Get the tape, do it again. But the cool thing about that track is local Pedron, Sheila McSherry from D-Mags, sings that female voice there in the background. So she gave it a great touch.
That's not you.
No. You ribbing me?
No, I'm curious.
So they're playing soon, aren't they, D-Mags?
Yeah, they're Coco. Where is that show at?
Bruco?
I think so.
Bruco, I think, yeah.
Sixth Street, San
Francisco. August, maybe. Bruco. I think it's August.
Best place to play.
Yeah.
Under the stairwell. I remember playing with there with Pete and Jer. Whoa. You're playing on July 29th,
We're
right?
Playing the show.
This gig with the
Pontiac
Brothers jumping up and down.
Yeah.
there's different people in Liquor Giants.
Yeah, actually, the singer in the Pontiac Brothers was the drummer in the Middle Class, and yeah. Eddie in the Subtitles.
You're right.
And then when I moved back to L.A., I said, hey, do you want to play drums in this other band I got? And he said, okay. So he's the drummer on...
He's the drummer in this band.
So yeah.
That's the common thread.
Yeah.
No, the other two cats are different.
Yeah, just buddies and... like, again, for you young listeners out there, you know, don't necessarily join a band with the best players. Get in a band with people that like the songs you're writing and are, you know, like going to champion the stuff you're doing. That's way more important than playing with...
That's good advice.
Than really top-notch guys. Top-notch guys... I remember Paul Westerberg said this. I wish I had. He said, there's nothing more boring than a professional musician. You know, I love guys that can really play, but guys that are just, you know, trained and don't have any soul, go away. You know, I like the people that are just letting it all hang out and get better with time, too, you know.
Should I tell them about the Les Paul, the trade? I had a 91 Rickenbacker at the studio in 99, and he had is it a 56 Les Paul?
I think they only made them 1 year, so
yeah.
What year that is.
And he traded the 56 Les Paul for our 91 Rickenbacker.
Yeah.
And I think you even said, don't pay me the 150 for the recording, and it's
really?
A straight trade.
Oh, okay.
And so we made that trade. And it's funny, when you played at Al's Bar, he had a natural ice, you know, beer thing spray painted on this 56 Les Paul. I mean, if you gussied up that Les Paul, it'd be worth $15,000. You know, but I know it's been cracked.
Yeah, somebody else had stripped it, and
yeah.
I think I paid $200 for it or something.
It's still the silver, that last silver that you
yeah,
got.
But. I don't know about that.
That'll be showcased.
Maybe collector people.
That'll, yeah, collector
not musician people.
People. Not musician
people. Yeah.
They're different.
Absolutely.
Right.
So we called him a Les Paul traitor. Traitor. Get it?
I met Les Paul. He's a character, man. He was a trip.
I saw him when I lived in New York. I lived right across the street from this club. He played
Sweet
every Basil's? Monday night.
Or Ruby Tuesdays?
It was called Something Tuesdays. Black Tuesdays or Something Tuesdays.
Ruby Tuesday or something?
No, it was Something Tuesday.
Fat
Tuesdays, that's it.
Yeah, because
yeah,
I've seen them there. He had like a, what do you call that, residency.
Yeah, he had a trio that played every Monday night, and he had a sinus condition. I just remember he was always blowing his nose, but like, God, Les Paul sitting this far away from
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he just played Les Paul music. It wasn't, you can't pigeonhole what he was doing.
It
wasn't
jazz.
And it was totally complicated.
No sustain. He came and played here at this weird club in Torrance called, what was that called? It was called Plush Pony for a time. The Strand.
Yeah.
And I had in Smyrna, I got a Les Paul signature.
Yeah.
In the old days, you could buy these old bass
right.
guitars and shit before internet.
Yep.
Econo, right? And it's a Les Paul signature. He's playing in town. I'm going to go and sign it, you know? And, I go there and he's eating a donut. And it's sound check. You know, I come in the side door and I go do this. His band was just a rhythm guitarist and a stand up bass.
That's what I saw.
No drumming, yeah. The guy, the rhythm guitarist was so intense in the stand up, they didn't need one. And his music was tricky. Like, I remember no sustain.
Yeah.
The notes would just die. And he used to whammy a lot. Well, when he went to talk to me, he put the donut on the whammy. And he talked to me for like 2.5 hours. And his dad was getting all pissed, you know, waiting. And then he goes to sign my bass. Yeah, you got one of those. Yeah, he was telling me all kinds of shit about how he designed the Capitol studio and how they forgot to put in the echo chambers. They had to dig up the parking lot and put them back in. Because they're just hallways with a speaker and a microphone.
Right.
All this stuff, you know, about his arm and... He was in Bing Crosby's trio. He told me about touring with him in like the late 40s.
No,
and shit. He was. And finally gets to sign him my thing. And he puts, keep on picking, Mike. And I use my fingers. So I've done gigs with this thing.
Yeah.
So it's only like half on there.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. To me, those things are made for playing. Yeah. You know, collectors, yeah. Yeah, like Dirk and shit.
Now it says keep on plucking.
Oh, it says keep on picking stuff. In fact, some guy with us, that Stooges thing at All Tomorrow's Party, some security guy said he was Les Paul's security guy for years, and he broke out all these picks, he said, that were handmade by Les Paul. They were all these little plastics all... whatever. Scraped off like he'd do them on the tabletop. So, I don't know.
I heard a story where he and his son were driving back from a gig in New York to Philadelphia, where he lived, I guess.
Yeah.
And they stopped off to have a beer at some roadhouse place. And the band was playing. This was like early 60s. It was just like a black R&B band. They got back in the car and they said, what did you think about that guitar player? I said, that's the best guitar player I ever heard. I said, let's go back and watch that guy again. They went back. Place was closed. He said like 2-3 years later he heard Purple Haze on the radio, and he goes, that's the guy.
Oh,
and he
wow.
met Jimi Hendrix later and said, did you play at a roadhouse in 1963 or whatever? He goes, yeah. He goes, but you were playing right-handed. And he goes, yeah, I could play right-handed or left-handed. That's just, I love that stuff where two giant people like just bump into each other. And
wow. Gone. There's some in Miles' book where he wanted to do sketches of Spain with him.
With Les Paul?
No, with Jimmy.
Jimmy, oh, okay.
And Jimmy was all embarrassed because he couldn't read music.
Right.
You know, he used to sing with the lights off, I heard, in the studio. Yeah. He's kind of a shy guy. Yeah. In a way.
He had no confidence in his vocal.
Yeah, so. He was a bitchin' singer.
Yeah. You're a real pop geek, you will just go nuts over.
He was a tripper.
There's a really weird guy that did a million different styles. And
one of his. Maybe ELO.
Well, he formed ELO with Jeff Lynne. That first album did nothing, and then he quit, and then it went off to be...
But Do You Wanna?
Do Ya.
Do Ya is that?
That's a Move song, but Jeff Lynne was in the Move at the end. He did like this fake Phil Spector, a couple of Phil Spector type records that were really out there. But yeah, I just
one trippy of those personality.
Guys I absolutely love. Liked the same kind of music as me and was a weirdo, so.
Yeah. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
It's an honor.
Matt Coco, thanks for bringing him aboard, making it possible to facilitate. Brother Matt, thank you for your always essential aiding and abetting here at the Low Grotto. The big gig, jump up and down time to July 29, Long Beach, not too far from Orange County, not too far from Pedro, but I will be in Corsica, sorry, my first time there. But I'm going to be there with you in spirit. Pontiac Brothers and Fifth Story Tenant. Who else?
The Things. Long Beach with a Z. They're a great party band. They're playing last. Okay. And then Good Fiction is this kind of pop band. They do a replacements cover. They went through the mill on Sire Records, too. And the funny thing is the singer of Good Fiction is a spitting image of Matt Simon from the Pontiacs. Tall guy with the suit on, and you'll see. So we'll have two.
Did you put this together, this gig?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, after the after the Frontier thing, I just thought they'd have a hankering again, and I contacted them, and here we are. Okay. Took a while, but.
Best of luck, and like I said, honor to have you aboard, and your music journey is trippy one and a good one, and maybe kind of Pine Top Perkins. Huh? Yeah. It's not all the way on the shelf, right?
Yeah. No, I'll fight.
It's great.
Been kicking around a while.
Yeah. Thank you again. Okay.
Thank you, buddy.
Everybody, it's been July 19, 2011, Watt for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.